We come to this morning's passage, which is the book of Daniel, chapter 2. Please turn to the Old Testament book of Daniel. Daniel, chapter 2. It's quite a long chapter, but it needs to be kept together because the substance is connected. So let us look at Daniel, chapter 2. Starting from verse 1. Now, in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams, and his spirit was so troubled that his sleep left him. Then the king gave the command to call the magicians, the astrologers, the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans to tell the king his dreams. So they came and stood before the king. And the king said to them, "I've had a dream, and my spirit is anxious to know the dream." Then the Chaldeans spoke to the king in Aramaic, "O king, live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will give you the interpretation." The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, "My decision is firm. If you do not make known the dream to me and its interpretation, you shall be cut in pieces, and your houses shall be made an ash heap. However, if you tell the dream and its interpretation, you shall receive from me gifts, rewards, and great honor. Therefore, tell me the dream and its interpretation." They answered again and said, "Let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will give its interpretation." The king answered and said, "I know for certain that you would gain time, because you see that my decision is firm. If you do not make known the dream to me, there is only one decree for you, for you have agreed to speak lying and corrupt words before me till the time has changed. Therefore, tell me the dream, and I shall know that you can give me its interpretation." The Chaldeans answered the king and said, "There is not a man on earth who can tell the king's matter. Therefore, no king, lord, or ruler has ever asked such things of any magician, astrologer, or Chaldean. It is a difficult thing that the king requests, and there is no other who can tell it to the king except the gods, whose dwelling is not with flesh." For this reason, the king was angry and very furious, and gave the command to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. So the decree went out, and they began killing the wise men, and they sought Daniel and his companions to kill them. Then with counsel and wisdom, Daniel answered Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, who had gone out to kill the wise men of Babylon. He answered and said to Arioch, the king's captain, "Why is the decree from the king so urgent?" Then Arioch made the decision known to Daniel. So Daniel went in and asked the king to give him time, that he might tell the king the interpretation. Then Daniel went to his house and made the decision known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions, that they might seek mercies from the God of heaven concerning this secret, so that Daniel and his companions might not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Then the secret was revealed to Daniel in the night vision. So Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel answered and said, "Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his, and he changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings and raises up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals deep and secret things. He knows what is in the darkness, and light dwells with him. I thank you and praise you, O God of my fathers. You have given me wisdom and might, and have now made known to me what we ask you, for you have made known to us the king's demand." Therefore Daniel went to Arioch, whom the king had appointed to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and said thus to him, "Do not destroy the wise men of Babylon. Take me before the king, and I will tell the king the interpretation." Then Arioch quickly brought Daniel before the king and said thus to him, "I have found a man of the captives of Judah who will make known to the king the interpretation." The king answered and said to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, "Are you able to make known to me the dream which I have seen and its interpretation?" Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, "The secret which the king had demanded, the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, and the soothsayers cannot declare to the king. But there is a God in heaven who reveals secrets, and he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days. Your dream and the visions of your head upon your bed were these. As for you, O king, thoughts came to your mind while on your bed about what would come to pass after this, and he who reveals secrets has made known to you what will be. But as for me, the secret has not been revealed to me, because I have more wisdom than anyone living. But for our sakes, who make known that interpretation to the king, and that you may know the thoughts of your heart. You, O king, were watching, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose splendor was excellent, stood before you. Its form was awesome. This image's head was of fine gold, its chest and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, and its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay. You watched while the stone was cut out without hands, which struck the image of its feet of iron and clay and broke them in pieces. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold were crushed together and became like chaff from the summer threshing floors. The wind carried them away so that no trace of them was found. And the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. This is the dream. Now we will tell you the interpretation of it before the king. You, O king, are a king of kings. For the God of heaven has given you a kingdom, power, strength, and glory. And wherever the children of men dwell, or the beasts of the field and the birds of the heaven, he has given them into your hand, as has made you ruler over them all. You are this head of gold, but after you shall arise another kingdom inferior to yours, then another, a third kingdom of bronze, which shall rule over all the earth. And the fourth kingdom shall be as iron, as strong as iron, inasmuch as iron breaks into pieces and shatters everything. And like iron that crushes, that kingdom will break in pieces and crush all the others. Whereas you saw the feet and toes, partly in potter's clay and partly of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, yet the strength of the iron shall be in it, just as you saw the iron mixed with ceramic clay. And as the toes of the feet were partly of iron and partly of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly fragile, as you saw iron mixed with ceramic clay. They will mingle with the seed of man, but they will not adhere to one another, just as iron does not mix with clay. And in the days of these kings, the God of heaven will step up, will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. And the kingdom shall be left to our other people. It shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Inasmuch as you saw that the stone was cut of the mountain without hands, and that it broke in pieces the iron, the bronze, the clay, and the silver, and the gold, the great God has made known to the king what will come to pass after this. The dream is certain, and its interpretation is sure. Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell on his face, prostrate before Daniel, and commanded that they should present an offering and incense to him. The king answered Daniel and said, "Truly your God is the God of gods, the Lord of kings, and a revealer of secrets, since you could reveal this secret." Then the king promoted Daniel and gave him many great gifts, and he made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon, and chief administrator over all the wise men of Babylon. Also Daniel petitioned the king, and he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. But Daniel sat in the gate of the king. We come to this message, Nebuchadnezzar's dream. We cover chapter 2, all the way from verse 1 to verse 49. It appears to be a long passage, but because of the connectedness of the passage, if we break it up, it's a bit difficult. We become anxious because of this. Is connected as a whole. It is preferable if we consider it at one go. And of course, by having breath, we miss out on somewhat on the depth. But there are times when the breath is more important than the depth. At other times, we prefer the depth and miss out a little bit on the breath. So this is what we are going to do today. We look at the chapter as a whole. And at this time, Nebuchadnezzar was reigning by himself. Before this, he was reigning as co-ruler with his father. When Jerusalem was overtaken by Babylon, it was Nebuchadnezzar's father who was the actual king. And it was the practice in those days, a king would rule for many years, and then towards the time when he is old, he would have his son rule together as co-regent. So in many old manuscripts, there is this practice that is known. So when we study the life of the kings in the Old Testament, for example, you must realize that the kings often reign with the father for some time, and then when the father abdicated, stepped down or died, then the co-regent will reign as the sole king. Then he would do the same with his son in the years to come. So Nebuchadnezzar was now reigning by himself, and in the second year of his reign, this incident took place. We are told in verse 1 of chapter 2. Now, in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams, and his spirit was troubled, and his sleep left him. So this man had a number of dreams, and it seems to be the same dream repeated from various angles, and he became clear about the dream, but he could not understand what that meant, what the dreams meant, and he was very much troubled. He couldn't sleep well, and we are going to see that he was quite a temperamental man and quite a smart man, and he wanted his wise men to interpret the dreams for him. Now Daniel and his friends came into the picture, because Daniel and his friends had already undergone 3 years of training. The best training was given in Babylon for these young men from the surrounding nations conquered by Babylon. Babylon would conquer a nation and choose the cream of the nation, bring them to Babylon and train them up. And they have the best university education, where the topmost professors all taught them for 3 years. And Daniel and his friends underwent the test, and the king personally sat on the panel with all his wise men, and they tested all the wise men, and we don't know how many there were, probably a few hundred people. Then they will be screened, and then they finally came to just a pool of the top few, and Daniel and his friends came up the absolute top, and they found that Daniel and his friends were 10 times better than even the professors around. And on and off, we do meet with such individuals. We read of those geniuses, you see, child genius, you see, from early, they are somehow very good. For example, there are those who are very good at mathematics, and perhaps the father is a professor at the university. From young, he teaches the son, and to his amazement, he finds that his son can understand and pick up things, and very soon the son becomes very good, see. And there are individuals like this, but for the case of Daniel, it's because of their God. Their God was with them. We do not know whether they were already known for their intelligence. And normally God does use so-called natural intelligence and sanctify these natural gifts to become spiritual gifts used by God when we are converted. When we look back at our lives, do we not see God's hand had been upon us, where we were born, in what family, the experiences that we underwent, and some of them very unpleasant ones, but even those were being used by God to mold our characters, so that today, when converted, we realize that God is using us because of the way He has dealt with us in times past. So God is sovereign like that. God is in control of history. God is in control of individual lives. So Daniel and his friends probably had been intelligent before that, but God was with them, and they came to this university education for 3 years. Yes, it is really the top institution, so they might not call it university, but it's the equivalent. It is the highest possible institution where the best education was given, and they came up tops, and they were already in positions of influence. They were not astrologers. They did not foretell people's life. They did not dabble in black magic. But they were classified among the wise men of the kingdom. The wise men were of different categories. There were the astrologers, the sorcerers. There were the different categories of wise men. So Daniel and his friends were not involved in all this. We know that they were not involved because they believe in Jehovah, who forbid this type of dabbling in the black arts, you see, in the hidden things, the black magic and things like that. They don't involve in all this. We know that because they have made a stand for for their faith before this. So they were still in danger because of being classified under the category of wise men. It is like today we would announce that, you see, the civil servants of a certain category. Wow, when that category is mentioned, then you have to examine yourself. Hey, do I belong to that category? Yeah. So perhaps, you see, let us say, good news, you are going to get a big pay package at the end of this year of this category. Yeah. So there are different civil servants, but you know that your pay scale belongs to that. You see, you are of that category. Okay. Or it might be the bad news. You say the government is going to trim down all those of that category. Have to go. You say, then you have to ask whether you are involved. Okay. So Daniel and his friends were involved like that. Okay. And this was not a pleasant thing. What actually happened, we want to see. And what we see is that God's hand is in all these happenings. Men get agitated. We think that we are making history. So sometimes great things happen, people invent certain things that affect lives. So then at other times bad things happen, many lives are affected. So we think that our world is just made up of men interacting with men. We make history, but actually history is God's story, not men's story. God is in control. And this truth comes across very clearly, that God is sovereign and He allows things to happen. He controls things as they happen, all to fulfill His purpose. And in this case, it is for the furtherance of His kingdom to His glory. That is the ultimate. His glory is to be seen by His creatures. Then He wants everyone to realize that He has chosen a people for Himself. See? And therefore He will preserve the remnant, even though those of His people have gone astray. That's why they were taken away. They were engaged in idolatry of various kinds. They were joining themselves to the pagan nations around. Although in name they were worshipping the true God, Jehovah. But we saw that they were very idolatrous. The prophets have warned them for years and years, but they did not listen. Finally, God allowed them to be taken away, and the Babylonians attacked. And in the first batch, Daniel and his friends were taken away. Then they subsequently attacked three more times in the 23 years, and they took further more people away. So that roughly is the background. So we are going to study this long chapter under two sections. We are considering first Nebuchadnezzar, who had a problem. So that covers verse 1 to verse 13. Then the rest of the time is devoted to Daniel, who interacted with the king. So Nebuchadnezzar had a problem, verse 1 to verse 13. Daniel had the solution, verse 14 to verse 49. And to help us study, we have pegs again to hang our thoughts. So remember the pegs, the hooks that you place on the wall to hang your clothes or hang your bags, hang your belt, whatever. See? So that way we can be more tidy instead of our things scattered everywhere. So our belt is all on that one rack. See, our bags we hang on one place. Our tie or our clothes we hang at the same. So these are hooks that help us to hang things, hang thoughts on. So what are the hooks to help us hang these thoughts? In the first section, Nebuchadnezzar had a dream. We're going to consider what he saw, then what he said, and what he did. So he saw, he said, he did. Then in the second part, Daniel had the solution. We are going to reverse the order. We are going to see what Daniel did and what Daniel said and what Daniel saw. Okay? So what Nebuchadnezzar saw, what he said, what he did. And for Daniel, we reverse the order. What he did, what he said, and what he saw. So that way, it's easier to proceed. Now we come to the first section. Nebuchadnezzar had a problem. What did he see? So verse 1 to verse 2 shows to us what Nebuchadnezzar saw. He saw a vision in the dream. He saw in the dream there was this clear dream that is not made known to us yet. It's not revealed to us. But the dream came at different times. And obviously it's the same dream but from different angles. And it's so very vivid And it troubled Nebuchadnezzar. He knew that it was important, and he knew that it affected his life and probably his whole career, his empire. So he was troubled. He knew certain things in life. We know, we have a sense that it's important. We have to face it. We can't delay anymore. So here Nebuchadnezzar knew that he could not delay anymore. So he summoned all his advisors and chief men to himself. Okay? And he put it to this, all the wise men, the magicians, the astrologers, the sorcerers, all these people were summoned. We are not told that Daniel was summoned at this time, because Daniel did not know what actually happened until later he learned from the chief officer, Arioch. Okay? So you don't have to summon the hundreds or thousands of people to come at one go. You just go to the relevant department and say, you know, just pass the word down. As the king, you pass down the word to that relevant department. So since it concerns the interpretation of his dream, he just went to the relevant department and summoned those people. Astrologers, sorcerers, these are the people who look at the stars, who look at the weather, who reads events and interpret. So summon them. See? And these cauldrons, the must not be confused with the name of the people. It's the Babylonians are also known as Chaldeans. But the official position of this category of officers are also known as Chaldeans. So it gets a little bit confusing. So Babylonians or Chaldeans. In the Old Testament, when you read about the Chaldeans coming to take them away, so they are the Babylonians. So sometimes they are referred to as Babylonians, sometimes as Chaldeans. Okay? But the word Chaldean is also a reference to the position of those officers. It is like a word can have more than one meaning. So for example, you see, we say all the Datuks and Tansris are invited to that event. So we say, yeah, we know the Datuk staying next door to us, he's attending the function as well. See? But then we come to church, we say, hey, congratulations, we heard that you are Datuk now. You see? I said, well, Datuk, you got honored with the title Datuk. No, what we mean is that you have a grandson, so now you are Datuk. I say, so the name Datuk can have different meanings. So you have to see the context and determine the meaning. So here there's a category of officers, high level officers known as the Chaldeans. So together they came. Yeah? And the king told them, I have a problem. I have not been able to sleep well. I have had a dream and I need your help. See? And the Chaldeans and astrologers, you can see how confident, self-confident they were. And from the way they talk, you can see there's a certain arrogance behind their words. Yeah? And people of high position and highly respected by others, see? Danger is that they get it into their head. They begin to think too highly of themselves. Yeah? And it gets us into trouble when we begin to have too high an idea of ourselves. The Lord has His way of pricking us so that the balloon will pss, so that you don't get too swell-headed. See? So our head swells like balloons. Yeah? So of course the Lord will not cause the balloon to burst. But in this world, we prick a balloon, it can burst. We can face worse, but this is just an illustration to help us bring home the lesson. When things are well, okay, with your career, and God is using you, then along the way, you begin to just use God's name in vain already. You just call upon the name of the Lord when you need Him, but now you think that you are able. You forget yourself. And that is when the Lord might just prick the balloon. See, so that you are not so swell-headed. So be careful, be careful. Is the Lord saying anything to anyone here? Along the way, things have been well. You are doing well in your career, earning big money, being looked up to by people. Do be careful, do be careful. Walk humbly before God, before man. Really, it is good always to be reminded of truths like this. See, and when your children grow up, one of the things that you should constantly remind them of is this, you say, you don't rebuke them when they don't deserve to be rebuked. Then it's not very fair. And then you dampen their spirit unnecessarily. But the danger of people forgetting their God and thinking too highly of themselves, there is a danger. It's really dangerous. So it's good to just nicely, in the appropriate manner, to remind them to walk humbly before God and man. When you are successful in anything, always be thankful to God, and then that way we are kept safe. Yeah. So here, these astrologers, they show that tendency, and it is obvious in them. In verse 4, the Chaldeans spoke to the king in Aramaic. See? And this section, by the way, onwards is all in Aramaic. Aramaic is a language known as Syriac as well. So often we say the Bible consists of two portions, the Old Testament and the New Testament. The New Testament is written in Greek, and Greek is not the classical Greek. It is Koine Greek. It's a common, the common everyday use, sage, that type of Greek. Then we say the Old Testament was written in Hebrew. Yeah. But actually that is only a generalization. There are portions in the Old Testament which is written in what is called Chaldean, the language of the local people there, or Syriac, or Aramaic. It's called Aramaic. Yeah? So Chalde or Syriac or Aramaic is the name of that language. So from this portion on, it is written up to chapter 7. Yeah? It's all in Syriac, not in Hebrew. Now, why instead of being in Hebrew, write in Syriac? Probably to highlight the atmosphere of the situation, that it is in that type of atmosphere, spiritually dark atmosphere, where people believe in spirits, believe in divination. So it is almost like a film director, he produces a film. You say, wow, this is a nice film. You say, film show, the storyline is good. And somehow what? The technique is good. Those of us who are not in producing cinematography, we are not in this line, we are not producing films. So we hardly take notice of this. But when you analyze and say, that show is so good, why? The storyline is good. It's not too simplistic where you can guess, but there was an unexpected point and then things happened quite contrary to what you expected. Wow, you know, really, storyline. Then the other is the technique used. Perhaps, you see, there's a fast forward an event in the future, then you come back to the beginning. So it is later, after the film show, you go home, that you think, at the beginning there was that splash of events, now I understand, after following the film, the show through. So that is a technique, see, to like anticipate something, but you don't know head or tail about it, then you start from the beginning to tell the story. And then at certain places, you might just make it black and white instead of color as normal. See? Now, the black and white scenes helps you to convey a certain mood, certain atmosphere. So you know straight away, what does it tell you about? It's about the past. It's about the past. It is like looking at the old photographs, you see, faded, you know, the black and white photograph. You know, this is an old style photography. And so here, this portion is in Syriac or in Aramaic, in order to convey that atmosphere. It's in that atmosphere. So Daniel and his friends operated. And these people were so arrogant. They were so confident. They said, tell us your dream, and we will be able to give you the interpretation. Really? They say, look at verse 4. They said, tell us your dream, and the interpretation. We will give you the interpretation. We will give you the interpretation. So confident. See? But the king saw through their attempt to play with time. See, he knew that, you know, they claim the ability. They claim they are able to interpret. But you tell me the dream if you are able to interpret. Tell me the dream. See? And this Chaldean were caught there, you see. And the king put it very firmly. The king must have brooded over the matter. He has been troubled, and then should I call upon all these wise men? And what if they just tell me things that are not true? And all the while, perhaps he had been having doubts about this man. whether they were able really to interpret dreams. And a number of them probably have agitated him. It can't be just a sudden outburst. Okay? Along the way, he must have had incidents with them such that he began to doubt the ability of this so-called wise man. We have our own local expressions everywhere. You know, these people might be just, you know, blowing their trumpet, we say. Now letting go their what do you call that? Firecrackers, we say, talking big, you see. So the king must have had doubts, and in his interaction with them he must have had been quite irritated, and he has to control himself because he has to maintain the dignity as king, and these are high officials, you see. But you see a sudden outburst. He has brooded over it and he came up with this clear decision. He says in verse 5, my decision is firm. If you do not make known the dream to me and its interpretation, you shall be cut in pieces and your houses shall be as ash heap. Burn them. Wow. Why so severe? Of course, he is the king, the despot. He could do what he wanted, even if it is unjust and cruel. You see? And there have been unjust and cruel kings in history, many of them. See, government is also an unjust and cruel. And here was one of them, an unjust, cruel man. But wait, why did he suddenly burst out on his own respected officials? This is where we must think through. This king has been troubled for some time. And then he must have been struggling to consider whether or not to get the wise men to interpret. And along the way, he must have been doubting their ability. And along the way, he must have had clashes. He must have felt irritated by some of them. And along the way, he felt, wow, he really couldn't stand it anymore. It has to come out. I have to find the interpretation. But if these men are just bluffing their way through, you see, let me just put it to them like that. You see? So he said to them very firmly, see, you either not only give me the interpretation, tell me the dream. Because if you have the ability to give the interpretation, you are so keng, so capable, so smart. Then tell me the dream. Otherwise, you will be put to death. And not put to death just by, you know, one chopping off the head. No, you will be chopped to pieces, you see. And then your houses will be burned, you see. That means the king would be extremely angry if he found them to be just bluffing their way through. And now you see the reaction of the officials. They begin to become more polite. You see, even from the words you can tell, verse 7, they answered again and said, let the king tell his servants the dream and we will give his interpretation. The king answered and said, I know for certain that you would gain time because my decision is firm. They are in danger now. So they are trying to gain time. Then he insisted again, verse 9, if you do not make known the dream to me, there's only one decree. And remember, the decree of the Persian kings cannot be altered. Once it's issued, it must be carried out. And what you can do is to counter it by issuing another decree, like what happened in the days of Esther, Queen Esther. Remember, when the king issued the decree for all the Jews in the kingdom to be killed by a certain date, he couldn't withdraw the decree. See? So what he could do was to issue another decree. So the decree was issued to say that the Jews could fight back, could defend themselves. In that way, it's neutralized. The enemy wanted to attack them, they could fight back. So here the king, he said, it cannot be changed anymore. It is out. If you can't tell me the dream and its interpretation, this is certain to happen to you. Today we have equivalents. We don't have despotic decrees like that. People may issue so-called fatwas and whatever. That's the equivalent. It came from that area, that period of time. See, they use the same type of language. But there are laws that are mandatory. For example, if you commit a certain crime, like it or not, the judge has to pass that judgment on you. See, the moment you are proven to belong to that category, you have committed that crime, the judgment is certain. Either perhaps death death sentence. It's mandatory. Or jail for life or whatever. So because that law requires it, you cannot negotiate about the judgment, the punishment. Okay? So something like this is happening here. The king said, is this a decree? You can't negotiate. Say, at least spare me. I spend the rest of my life in prison. You know, it's not such a big crime and it's a difficult task to accomplish. You can't argue. The king said, it's a decree. See? And of course, this man knew that their lives were hanging in the balance. Huh? And now they protested. They protested in a pitiful way. Look at verse 10. See? The Chaldeans answered the king and said, there is not a man on earth who can tell the king's matter. He said, not a single man in this world. So, in other words, please don't be unreasonable. No man can tell you your dream. See? Yeah? And for that reason, never in history before, no king, no lord, no ruler has ever asked such a thing of any magician or astrologer or Chaldean. Wow. Strong way of putting it, persuasive way of putting it. And they were clever people, you must remember. They have to put things in a persuasive way and convincing way to save their own lives. Their lives were in danger now. See? And in verse 11, it is a difficult thing that the king requests, and there is no other who can tell it to the king except the gods whose dwelling is not among flesh. See? So that means among mortals, among human beings. That is not a possibility. It belongs to the realm of the gods. They are pleading, as it were, for their lives now. Okay. And the king, of course, was firm about it. You know, in verse 12, for this reason, the king was angry and very furious. He knew that they were bluffing their way. Huh? Really, the Tua Pao Xian, you know, all these people, they have to die. They are big braggers and pretenders all these years, you know. They now are exposed. They have to die, see. He gave the command for all the wise men, even though only one department and a group of them only came, see. But the rest of the wise men, all who belong to that category, all had to be put to death. Wow, the decree went out. And so some really got killed until Daniel intervened. You look at verse 13, so the decree went out and they began killing the wise men, and they began to plan already, they were coming already for Daniel and his companions to kill them. It was then that Daniel stepped forward to deal with the situation. See, sometimes it is wise not to intervene. We have no locus standi, as it were. You see, we are troubled, we are agitated even. You see, but it's not our realm, not our line. We are not in no position to handle it. Let others in a better position. But you say, but you know, if everybody keeps quiet, then evil will continue. You must be wise to see when is the right time, when whether you are capable of doing it or not. Otherwise, it is really song si. You are just offering yourself to die. You die uselessly. See? You're not able. Why should you? Yeah. Leave it to people who are able and who are in a position to do so. So certain people want to take officers to the courts. See? But their case is just kicked out. It's not even open up for discussion. They look at you in a position, you have no locus standi, you have nothing to do with the case, it doesn't concern you. Ha! So it's just thrown out like that. See? And Daniel, in his case, you know, he wasn't directly involved and he had been quiet all this while. But when people come now to want to kill him, he couldn't keep quiet anymore. He had to step forward. And this is where the other issue arises. There's such a thing as the sin of silence. When you know the truth and you keep quiet, when you can say something or do something and you don't do it, we must not pit one extreme against the other. We must not justify one extreme with another. Often people engage in this tactic. See? So, for example, see, let us say the children are making too much noise in the home. See? So the mother may say, you know, this house is like a madhouse, you know. Then the children might rebut,
Okay, you want us to keep quiet, how we be stupid fools and keep quiet all the day of our lives. See, no, that is not the right response. See? It doesn't make sense, you see. We know that the mom is angry because it is the noise and the rowdiness is beyond normal. Huh? So she's putting it in the extreme and saying this is like a madhouse, you know.
Yes.
But you want to defend yourself, you come and say, okay, if we keep quiet and totally be silent, then we will be like stupid fools. But nobody asked you to be stupid fools like that. So we don't use one extreme to justify another. No, no. And similarly, in situation in life, many situations in life, we don't rush where angels dare not tread. Why fools rush in? And I told you the incident where there was a commotion and this man was cycling into town. Aiyah, you say in his Teochew dialect, bo tui pi, you know, that means like the nose is not in its proper place, bo tui pi. Ah, he said, not so correct, that something is not right. So he cycled home, you see, and he saved his life, you know, because there was a riot, race riots at that time, you see. And I told you already the story, you know. Ah, so don't poke your nose unnecessary where you don't belong. Ah, don't be too curious. Curiosity has killed more cats than cats have killed rats. Haven't you heard that saying? See? And that old man happened to be my maternal grandfather. The story is passed down, how he survived. If he rushed there out of curiosity, he could probably have been killed. See? But the other extreme is that we are silent when we are in a position to do so, to say something, when we are in a position to do something. See? So you must assess yourself, has that wisdom, when is the time, and are you in the right position, are you the one? And it will help you so much, so that you don't blow your tops and you don't create too much of a row unnecessarily, because you know your noise and your thing, you're attracting unnecessary attention. You are the first to face the music, unnecessarily. You're just seeking death for nothing, when you know that you can't do anything because you are not in a position to do so. But when you are in a position to do so, make sure you do so. Otherwise, you commit the sin of silence. Now, that is not good. And for us, we have the truth. When people are speaking nonsensical things, and then nobody seems to have the right, the solution. And here we have the truth, and we keep quiet. We might have to say, may I say something? See, I'm so and so. This is my background. This is my experience. And if only you would listen, this is my contribution. This is what we must do. See? And on many such occasions, you discover people need help. They need guidance. And we are able to do something. We must. And so here Daniel waited until that time before he acted. He realized the time has come. He couldn't keep silent anymore. Otherwise, he would be harmed as well. Yeah? So the first part is clear. We know that God hand was behind all this to bring in Daniel and his friends into the picture. It's not going to be pleasant for Daniel and his friends, but God's hand was certainly in all this. Then we come to the second section. What Daniel did, he wisely spoke to the chief official. The chief official must have been very respectful to Daniel. He said, sorry sir, but we have orders from the king. The decree has come and we have to take you. Daniel then began to question what's happening. Yeah. And in verse 14, Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, who had gone out to kill the wise men of Babylon, he answered and said, why is this so urgent? Lives have been killed. That's so urgent. So when Daniel heard what actually happened, Daniel took the initiative. See, he was going to be taken away. He said, give me some time, okay? I want to see the king. So in verse 16, Daniel went in and asked the king to give him time. And this time, he's frank about it. Give me time. I will tell you the dream. See? Then Daniel went home. See? And what did he do? You see? He went home in order to gather his friends together and say, let's have a prayer meeting. In today's language, you say, let's have a prayer meeting. Say, what, a prayer meeting? Of course. Don't you believe in prayer? Of course. then in such a situation you don't pray. Wow, then that will be very much amiss. We are people of faith. We trust in God. And this is the first thought. We must turn the matter to God in prayer. So there he gathered his friend and in verse, his friends and verse 18, that they might seek mercies from the God of heaven concerning this secret, so that Daniel and his companions might not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Remember, the decree has been carried out already. A number of them have died, and the commotion must have resulted in Daniel hearing news already. And Daniel was thinking, why so urgent? See, so when they came for him, he said, yeah, you wait. And he went to see the king. See? And he frankly told the king, you have to give us some time. I will give you the answer. See? And so they prayed. And in verse 19, then the secret was revealed to Daniel in a night vision. And Daniel, he blessed the Lord. He praised God. See? So Daniel's spirituality is to be noted. Remember, at this time, he was still a young man. When taken away, he was barely 14, 15 years old. Round about that. Maximum 15 years old. Because from the records and so on, we got the information that the cream taken away were young men without blemish, capable young people. You cannot be skinny and you cannot be fat. You must be capable, athletic, and then you must pass certain intellectual, a certain level. Then they will select all this, see, and brought to Babylon. All-rounded training during that period of time. Okay? And after 3 years, how old would he be? Still hardly 20, you know. Okay? Then 2 years after this Nebuchadnezzar ascended the throne. So when did his father die? Let us give him a few years, and then Nebuchadnezzar was on the throne. So we would say Daniel was still a young adult, a very young man. See, but look at the level of maturity he had, the way he handled things, the way he talked to the chief of the guard, and the way he went to see the king, and the directness asking for time. When the king knew that the astrologers in the first place was playing for time, but here Daniel said, give us time. After all, we are going to die. You give us time. I'll come back with the answer. Yeah. He went back and prayed with his friends. See? And then in verse this 20 onwards is Daniel's prayer. One thing about this book of Daniel is his prayer is revealing, very revealing of his character. In our introduction to this book, we realized that Daniel was perhaps the only character apart from the Lord Jesus Christ. There's no blemish recorded of his life. And knowing that he is a man of like nature as us, he would have weaknesses like any other man. But the thing we are noting is that no blemish, no wrong is recorded about Daniel's life. In the case of Joseph, his life was like he suffered much and so on, and rose up high and was greatly used by God. But there's still a little bit of a blemish, because some people query whether he was a tale bearer, you know, whether he complained to his father about his brothers or not. See? But there are others who are kinder and say, no, Joseph was only doing what his father told him to do. He went to see how things were and came back and reported both positive and negative things. But there is a little bit of query about the character of Joseph. See, all other characters have blemishes recorded about them. Consider David, for example. He committed adultery. He committed murder. You consider Solomon. He married many foreign wives. His heart was drawn away to worship false gods. Consider Peter. He denied the Lord. Say, consider Paul. Say, he persecuted the church, and then when he was converted, he gave his life to the Lord, and we are told that there seems to be a problem with his eye along the way. So all in all, what we are saying is that this Daniel, through his prayer, you see, there is a certain depth of character in this man. He was a spiritual minded man. He was a mature, he was mature in his thinking, and he's capable all round in his interaction. In an emergency like that, he saw what needed to be done and went straight to the king with no hesitation, requested for time. When time was the problem with the earlier astrologers, they were bidding for time, and the king saw through it and didn't like that and issued a decree straight away. But Daniel, after hearing from Arioch what had happened, he went to do the what was needed. He didn't do the impossible and say, God, straight away give me the vision now. He could have asked God for that, but he knew that he has to spend time with God in prayer and seek the Lord's will. So Daniel did what was rightful. He's very really a person whom, when we study more carefully, we really are amazed. Of course, in any church, it is great to have just one or two individuals like that. Really. You don't have to have many, but you have one or two individuals like that. It is already a blessing. Okay? But when you have a situation where there are many such mature, capable, responsible people, wow. Say, wow. Blessed indeed is that church, and blessed indeed is that grouping of churches. And we have seen situations where the number of mature and capable people, sober-minded and capable people, are many. We really praise God. We're thankful to see that in that grouping of churches there are such people. We bemoan the fact that we still have not been blessed like that. May God raise up more of such people in the next generation. Really, really. People who are capable, intelligent. You really have to be intelligent. But intelligence by itself can be dangerous. You must have humility. You must have spirituality of heart. See? You must understand theology. You can't be shallow in your understanding of the Bible. To be all-rounded. To know when to act. To know what to do. See? In any situation. Wow. We must pray for such. Pray for such. Daniel was a spiritually mature man despite his young age. Then what did Daniel say? Verse 24. Daniel went to Arioch and asked him to say, we are ready to meet the king. See, earlier when he saw the king, he told Arioch he wanted to see the king. So everything has to go through the chief guard, Arioch. So now he's ready. He came to Arioch. He's ready to see the king. See? And you look at the words of Arioch, this man, he's a man of the world. In verse 24, verse 25, Arioch quickly brought Daniel before the king and said thus to him, I have found a man of the captives of Judah who will make known to the king the interpretation. Oh, you have found. All the credit goes to you. he's claiming credit for himself. I have found. Oh. The king turned to Daniel and asked him, are you able to make known to me? By this time, the king probably had come down somewhat and began to think, perhaps I've been too brash, I rush things too much. I have been a bit unreasonable. So when Daniel approached him, it seems like a way out. The decree has been issued, it cannot be withdrawn, remember? And when he issued it, also face, you can't just do a bow turn. You cannot do a U-turn for a person of that position. And this is where, again, great wisdom is needed when you handle people of higher position than us in society. See? We don't compromise our position, but where there must be wisdom. See? And although we don't succumb to culture and compromise our faith, we don't. But the point is, wisdom is needed to make a stand for our faith given the circumstances that we are faced with. And in our type of culture and a situation, we don't say, that is our culture. So you forgo Christian values and Christian principles. That is not right. Culture is not the first consideration. The first consideration is, what does the Bible say? That is more important. See? And in our years of experience, the Lord has, by His grace, given to us. See? We have seen Christians elsewhere arguing like that. It's our culture. But we say, we are Christians first. What does the Bible say? But it's our culture, our way of doing things. Oh, then you can bend the Bible's rules. You can bypass the Bible's teaching. Now, that is not the right way. But having said that, we must understand, we don't just say, this is what the Bible say, and like a bull, now you just rush through. See? You just insist, this is the right way. That's what the Bible teaches. Hey, take into consideration how best to implement. See, we must be right about the matter, but we must also be right about the manner. Although matter is of primary importance, but if you lack wisdom in the manner of carrying out what you believe to be right, say, then you certainly are not like Daniel. Daniel and others in the Bible who were greatly used by God, they were right in what they believed in. The matter must be right, but the manner by which they carried out had to be right as well. See? So you don't expect the king to do a U-turn. He will lose face. So how do you go about it? And at the same time, you don't want to compromise. The truth has to be spoken, but he's higher than you. You have to say it clearly enough, but in such a way as to balance up everything. On the one hand, you don't fear the king because you fear God. God is in control of the whole situation. So that has to be clearly put across. But equally, you can't keep quiet. The king has to be taught a lesson as well. He has to be told, put in his proper place. But how do you put it in such a way that you are not arrogant and disrespectful? You see, God really has to give wisdom to Daniel. See? And there you see, this Daniel, how did he answer? What did he say? Verse 24 onwards, you see. He tells this, look at his words very carefully, you see. The secret which the king has demanded, verse 27. The secret which the king has demanded, so it's putting it like that, you demanded it, king, see. In other words, you have been a little bit too forward. You were actually asking for a little too much. The wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, the soothsayers cannot declare to the king. They couldn't. But there is a God in heaven who reveals secrets, and he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar. See, very respectfully, you don't say to you, hey, friends, language also plays a role. It's like the child who comes to the teacher, you know, awak, cikgu awak. No, you don't use say awak, you say cikgu all the way through. You understand in language? Huh? You address an older person. Huh? You don't say you. Huh? You refer to the person's name. So there is such a thing as laras bahasa, that way in which language is used. Huh? So he referred to the king respectfully but firmly. He said, you were actually making demands which this man couldn't reply, couldn't answer. But there is God in heaven. Yeah? Who reveals secret, he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days. Your dream and the visions of your heads upon your bed were these. As for you, O king, thoughts came to your mind while you were on your bed. So he described, even in the dream, he already saw how Nebuchadnezzar was struggling away and tossing about, and how this dream was given. Even that was made clear to Daniel. Eh? Then in verse 30, as for me, this secret has not been revealed to me because I have more wisdom than anyone living, but for our sakes, who make known the interpretations of the king, and that you may know the thoughts of your heart. So Daniel humbly says, it's not because we are more intelligent so we are able to, but God gives us this dream and interpretation for our sakes, to save our lives. See? And also for your sake, for your own good, if only you will respond correctly, only if you obey what is being said to you. It's like the gospel being preached. How do you respond to it? You can respond negatively and turn away. then you suffer for it. But if you obey what the gospel demands of you, repent and believe, then you will get the blessing. So Nebuchadnezzar is like being confronted with the gospel. Say, now how are you going to respond? Say, O king, in verse 31 now, O king, you were watching, and behold, a great image. That image was very great, splendid also, excellent. Say, and what was the image? Nebuchadnezzar began to describe that statue, that huge image. See, the head was of gold, and the arms and the chest of silver. See, the belly now of bronze. See, then the feet of clay mixed with iron mixed with clay. Wow! It's made clear to Nebuchadnezzar. So as Nebuchadnezzar heard the description, he must have been so amazed. Look at verse 35. Then we are told verse 34. You watch while a stone was cut out without hands. Amazing. A stone. You pick up a stone. That is still not a rock that you can't lift. A stone. Yeah? Not cut out with hands. Came and struck the image at its feet of iron and clay and broke them in pieces. Starting from there, you see. Then the iron and the clay, the bronze, the silver, the gold all crushed together and became like chaff, crushed down. And even though they were silver, bronze and gold, they for some reason became so brittle and became so light and become like chaff. Huh. A farming community will know what that is. It's so light, you blow and all the skin, the light skin is blown away. See? And that stone, it remained on the ground and it grew and grew and grew. So great, it filled the whole earth. That was what you saw. And now for the interpretation. See? If we were to stop here, you go home, you know, hey, what next? But here, the interpretation is given. Verse 36 onwards. See? So God has made you that gold head. See, it's not a subsequent Babylonian kingdom like what some people are saying. You, it says that verse 36, you are the one. You are that head. God has given you power and glory. See, and if you do right, your kingdom will be a blessing to many. See, but the problem is the king hasn't been doing right. See, so here is a warning. See, and that his kingdom will be replaced by another kingdom. See, by the Medo-Persian Empire. The Medes and Persians, they are people around Iran and Iraq, in today's Iran and Iraq. If you ask the people there, they will know their own history. You see, they'll say, oh, we are Medes or we are Persians. Persia was the old name for Iran. See? And the related people nearby, they are Medes. Yeah? And the Medes and the Persians were combined to form one power to overtake the Babylonians. So here is the silver with outstretched arms. And why outstretched arms with arms like that? Because their center was in Syria and in Egypt. See? They were big empire, so they created two centers. It's like, you know, Putrajaya, you know, but we make Labuan also, Wilaya Persekutuan, so that on the eastern side, in East Malaysia, there's an administrative capital, something like that. So there's Syria and Egypt, so that is the Medo-Persian Empire. Then it will be overtaken by the Greek Empire. See, Philip and then Alexander the Great, they would conquer. Then they would be the bronze. See? And they will be taken over by the Roman Empire. In the time of the Roman Empire, it was split into two, the two legs of the statue, see? East and West. See? And it will further spread, because as the Roman emperors, when they die, their system was that the generals, they have to get votes and sufficient number of votes in order to be the next emperor. They try to practice that type of republic with no kings. See? But the generals often fought one another to gain the power. So the kingdom finally split into many parts. It is during the time of the Roman Empire that the stone that is cut not by human hands, that means it is going to be God's work. Yeah. that stone is going to come like somebody shot a catapult. The stone comes, where is it going to land? Who is it going to hit? Not anybody, but he hit on that statue, on the feet. And because the feet is made up of iron and clay mixed together, iron is strong, but clay is not strong, so it's brittle. So when you hit, you shatter. See? And you shatter, resulting in the whole empire collapsing, and in resulting in what was built upon from earlier empires all collapsing. And we know that that stone is in the latter days. You look carefully, it's the latter days. The expression in the Bible, latter days, is a reference to this gospel age, from the coming of Christ to his coming again to judge the world. These are the latter days. The gospel age is called the latter days. That means this stone is a reference to someone whose kingdom will fill the whole earth and last forever. Say, who is that someone? You already know the answer. If you know the Bible, you know the answer. See, it's the Lord Jesus Christ, the Son of God. He will come. He is not somebody who made him king. He has always been king. God is going to send him to this earth. See? And his kingdom will quietly spread throughout the world like that stone. See? By his appearance, all other kingdoms cannot overtake him already. His kingdom will grow in the hearts of men quietly, like leaven. You know, you leaven the whole lump. See, like the mustard seed, it will grow and become a big tree. This is the kingdom of God. Jesus Christ has come to inaugurate, to start off this kingdom on earth. And it is happening now in our age. See, that is what is happening. It happened, it began from the time of the Romans. See, when the Roman Empire split into East and West and then further subdivided. And that was the time, when the stone arrived. And that stone is going to fill the whole earth. And forever, those other kingdoms, they try to rise, they will never be able to overcome the kingdom of God. Jesus Christ will build up his church. The kingdom of God will extend in the hearts of men. See? So sometimes it appears that the church faces setbacks, but actually it is not a true setback. See, the war will be won. Battles here and there might appear to be lost. A war is made out of many battles. So some battles may appear to be lost. Some churches are struck down. Some servants of God are struck dead. But the point is, God's work continues everywhere. And the gates of Hades cannot prevail against the church of Jesus Christ. That we can be sure of. So this was given to Daniel. Daniel gave the interpretation. So what Daniel said was so clear and so concise. Concerning days ahead, Daniel himself wouldn't, by his own cleverness, by his own intelligence, be able to see the future like that. He realized that Nebuchadnezzar's empire will collapse soon, replaced by the Medo-Persian Empire, replaced by the Greek Empire, replaced by the Roman Empire, but he wouldn't know the details in the future, just that the interpretation of this dream was given to him. See? And we know, as history unfolded, that was what happened. Really, the Babylonian Empire was overtaken. Then the next empire, Christ has come. And now his kingdom is growing. See? And Daniel, what he saw, verse 46, the king was so overcome, and he forgot himself that he was king, and Daniel was his subject, and not just an ordinary subject, one who is conquered and taken. See, the truth of what he heard just overwhelmed him, and he just fell prostrate before Daniel. See, and he ordered gifts to be given to Daniel, and Daniel was promoted to the highest position possible, just below the king. He's like in charge of the whole kingdom. And Daniel didn't forget his friends, and he wanted his friends around. We need fellowship. We can't be alone serving the Lord. So these were close friends who share the same vision. So he requested the king and said, may I have these friends put in the same office? in the same department, something to that effect. These people, these friends were raised in position as well. So don't look at it from the pecuniary, financial, and status aspect. Don't think like that. No. Daniel was beyond that. Daniel is not thinking of money, thinking of position, thinking of status for his friends. He's thinking more of keeping together as God's people, being in fellowship, and being like covenanted together. We stand together, we fall together. So we want to serve the Lord together. I need these friends. So of course he couldn't explain all this to these pagan kings. He just requested, may you please put these friends in my same office, as it were. So although they didn't occupy the same positions as Daniel, only one could, they were raised to a position, to positions that were high, and that kept Daniel close in that fellowship. Okay? That is what we must notice. So all in all, never before you saw a king bow down to a subject. Never before you see a pagan king acknowledging that your God is a true God, and giving all the gifts to Daniel as he has promised. Okay. So we draw to a close. What conclusions must we take with us? What lessons? What further lessons? One thing we must learn is history is God's story. It's not man's story. Normally we say history is the story of man. His story. That's how the word history came about. Man's story. But no, it's God's story. God is in control of everything, including the thinking, the hearts of men, the kings. See? Events might unfold in such a terrific way that we can't handle and we can't understand. But don't panic. Don't panic. Which party will be ruling next? What events are going to take place in the next few days? Yeah, in the next few days, isn't it? You all know, isn't it? Next few days only, people will be saying, stay home, don't go out. See, while precautions are needed, nevertheless, always be clear in your mind. God is the one in control. He allowed things to happen in order that his purpose might be fulfilled. See? And then we must come to realize that stone is growing, and it is growing still in our days. We live in that age where we see Christ's kingdom growing, growing, growing. And it will be a terrible thing if you are opposed to this kingdom. And it is a wonderful thing to be part of this kingdom. So which would you choose? You want to be outside this kingdom and be in opposition? You will never win. For sure you will never win. This prophecy says all others will be crushed. You see. But to be part of this kingdom and to be participants in this growing kingdom, what a great privilege it is to be involved. That's why we invite you, my friends, if you are not yet a true Christian, to come to Jesus Christ. He is that stone. And his kingdom is growing now, growing in the hearts of men and women, boys and girls. Come to Jesus Christ. Let this be a call to you to come to Jesus Christ. Trust in him. And all will be well. All will be well. May God bless us all.